Yelston, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It is a Tuesday mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Great to be with you. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays, Monday through Friday. Those are weekdays on Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app, on YouTube, on Twitch. That's where you can find the radio show. Good to be back in front of the microphone. It's been a few days with the long weekend, and had a family affair to attend to from out of town on Thursday and Friday last week. So been a while since we've chatted, faithful listener. So it's good to be with you guys. Week one is here, man. Week one is here. I'm fired up about it. That's why we worked on Labor Day yesterday, because no days off now, kind of, with the season here. So fired up. Colts this weekend. This game has potential. This is not the best opponent the Texans play on Sunday on this schedule. I think there's a handful of games that are going to be more difficult opponent-wise. Kansas City, Baltimore, possibly Buffalo, maybe the Jets, who knows, then the Indianapolis Colts. But I would contend this is the most important game on the schedule, just based on the fact that winning the division is always the first goal. This would be the most important, in my mind, this would be the most important win for the Texans as it goes towards securing the division. I think the Colts are the second best team in the division behind the Texans. If you're able to win the road affair against the Colts, in my mind, the second best team, that's your hardest game, and you've won that, and you've taken that from the Colts. So I think the Colts, I don't even know if they're among the top five most difficult opponents the Texans have on the schedule, but I think that this game empirically is the most important of the season, and I feel good about it. The only thing I don't feel good about right now with this game, I mean, there's some matchups that I'm nervous about. I'm nervous about the Colts' interior, their defensive line against the interior of the Texans' offensive line. I'm nervous about Jonathan Taylor running all over the place on the Texans. We don't know what this Texans run defense is going to look like. It's been a big overhaul on the defensive line. So what's that going to look like? And at linebacker, frankly, and no Christian Harris in this game. That hurts. The biggest thing that has me nervous is that the world thinks the Texans are not only going to win, but cover in this game. The Texans are 2.5-point favorites in this game on Sunday, which is, I find very surprising. Basically what that means, if you count home field advantage as 3 points, which, you know, some home field advantages are more than others, I would say the Colts have a good home field advantage, so 3 points is probably fair. You know, I would say at the far end of the home field advantage, like 3.5, 4 points would be like Kansas City, Baltimore, places like that, Seattle back in the day, places like that. At the skewing at the other end, probably like what the Texans were like 3 years ago or 2 years ago, where there's, you know, it's half full stands and people are just kind of, you know, just there recreationally. That would be more like maybe a 1 or 1.5-point favorite. I think 3 is good. I say all that to say that this would be the equivalent of saying that the Texans should be more than a touchdown favorite at NRG Stadium if these two teams were playing. Because you take the 3 points that the Colts are getting for home field already, and then you tack 3 more on for the Texans, 2.5-point favorite goes to an 8.5-point favorite. So I don't feel that that's the case. I don't feel like the Texans may very well win this game by more than a touchdown, but as far as handicapping goes, I don't feel like this is a game where these two teams are as far apart as the odds makers have them. But a lot of that's being driven by the fact that 85% of the bets are on the Texans. 91% of the money is on the Texans at the various sports books that report in on stuff like this. That is a yikes moment if you're a Texans fan, only because when the public is that skewed towards one side, it goes the other way way more often than the 9% of the time that the remaining 9% of where the money is right now. So that's a little scary just from a karmic standpoint for the Texans. We'll dig more into the matchup between the Texans and the Colts in the episode later this week on Thursday or Friday when we do our six pack of things to watch for this game coming up on Sunday. But needless to say, super excited. Can't wait to get back on the radio. Texans countdown starts at 9 a.m. with me and Seth. Seth Payne. And then the kickoff is at noon on Sunday against the Colts. And then Clint Sterner and I will have post-game duties till 6:30 that night. So fun long day, good long day. Should be great. The last couple times that the Texans have played the Colts on the road, it's actually been in week 18. Last year, clinching a playoff spot, and the year before that, basically clinching CJ Stroud. So so this is a different animal altogether. It's not week 18, it's week 1, and these are two teams that have high playoff hopes, not two teams like at the end of 2022 we're getting ready to both pick in the top 4. So that's a whole lot of fun. Before I get into the mailbag, a quick reminder on a couple of things. One, see at the bottom of the screen there, subscribe, rate, review the podcast. Really appreciate that. Hit that subscribe button. The regular season is here, so hit the subscribe button so you're getting everything automatically. If you're new to the podcast, I do 3 episodes a week during the season, the Tuesday mailbag episode, and whatever other news is out there for the Texans, I hit on Tuesday. And then late in the week, Thursday or Friday or the day before a game, if it's a weekday game, I'll do the preview episode, the 6-pack where I preview the game. And then I do an episode literally right after the post game is over. So it's 6:30. This post game is over. And by 6:35, I'm recording that bad boy. If it's at home, I'm recording it at the stadium. If it's a road game, I'm recording it up at the 610 studios. So I like to get that episode out quick. So you guys have it either that night or, you know, maybe the ride in tomorrow or the day afterwards, I should say. Now, on your ride in, I prefer that you listen to Payne and Pendergast. That would be great. But either one is fine. Listen to Payne and Pendergast, then listen to the podcast. Whatever it is you want to do, I appreciate you. So subscribe, rate, and review. Also, the Texans GM, Nick Caserio, was on with Seth and myself this morning on Sports Radio 610 on Tuesday morning. We talked a lot. We talked for 45 minutes about everything Texans. So we hit CJ Stroud. We hit Stephon Diggs. We hit all kinds of things with the relationship with him and D'Amico. I would say the highlights of the interview, there was a pretty fun, saucy exchange between Seth and Nick on Damian Pierce and body type and things like that. I would say go back and listen to it. He had some interesting things to say about Kenyon Green and how Kenyon has held up through the preseason. I've got to imagine he's pretty proud of that. That was a first-round pick of Nick's. It looked like it was going the wrong way, and now maybe it's going the right way with Kenyon Green. So some really good stuff on there. You can find it on the Payne and Pendergast podcast, or if you go to the Odyssey app, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, you can hit the rewind feature and listen to it. But either way, it should be pretty easy to find. Good conversation, about 45 minutes, and we always enjoy having Nick on. He's a lot of fun, especially now that the team's winning. He's even more fun to have on now. So as I take a sip. So, you can find that on the Odyssey app. All right, let's get to it. Mailbag, HOU mailbag@gmail.com. HOU mailbag@gmail.com is the email address. Again, later this week, we'll do the preview of the Colts game. Probably have some thoughts on week 1 of the NFL in general later this week. But let's get to your mailbag questions. Riley says, Sean, Texans named their team captains today. What do you think? Riley's a listener to the show, I'm guessing, to Payne and Pendergast. So he knows that I am a mark for a handful of things that Seth isn't nearly as big a mark as I am for. The NFL Top 100 and who is going to be named captain of the Houston Texans. I like that stuff. That stuff's fun to me. So the Texans, if you missed it, did name their 7 captains, 3 offense, 3 defense, and John Weeks, who is ostensibly the special teams captain, but I think he's just the captain because he's a GOAT and he's the man. I love John Weeks. As far as the other captains go, if you missed it, 3 offensive captains, C.J. Stroud, Stephon Diggs, Laremy Tunsil, and then the 3 defensive captains, Will Anderson Jr., Azeez Al-Shaair, and Jimmy Ward. I think I love this group of captains. I think they're all deserving. I think that it's a nice mix of younger guys with C.J. and with Will, with some older guys like Laremy, he's in his 9th season now. Azeez Al-Shaair is in, I believe, his 6th season. Jimmy Ward's been around forever. Stephon Diggs has been around forever. John Weeks has been around forever and ever and ever and ever. So I like the mix of young and old. I like the mix among positions. I like the mix of guys who were on the Texans last year mixed in with a couple of guys who are new to the team in Al-Shaair and Diggs. I predicted that those two, that Al-Shaair and Diggs, would be captains of this team the first week of training camp, just watching the two of them operate out of training camp, you could just tell that they had a leadership quality about them, that their teammates, that there's really a magnetic effect with those guys. I think Alshire's position makes a lot of sense, that he's your captain. He's essentially the brains of the defense as the Mike linebacker with the green dot on the back of the helmet for the radio transmitter. And Diggs is just, man, like, he's somebody. I asked Nick about that today. Just like, was he surprised at just how much of a leader Stephon Diggs appeared to be out of practice? You can hear that. You can hear his answer in the podcast of the interview. But I watched Diggs for 2 or 3 days out of practice, and I immediately thought, this guy's going to be a captain. He's helping everybody out. And again, like Alshire, there's a magnetic quality to Diggs that, if Diggs is not happy, maybe it's a magnetic quality that's of a concern, because he seems like he's got a lot of sway and a lot of influence over the younger players. But right now, that's a really good thing. So, yes, Riley, to answer your question, I saw who they named captains. I like the group. I don't know if I were to think it through and say, okay, who were like the last three out? Like, if we did this like bracketology, you know, we got the seven who made it into the big captain dance, the three that, you know, like the next few guys that were probably on that list, I would say, would be maybe Danielle Hunter along the defensive line. Although Danielle Hunter is very understated and very quiet. He doesn't have a big personality, which is fine. You need a good mix of guys like that. I think it's interesting. Jalen Petrie was a captain last year. He's not a captain this year. So that may be the most intriguing part about all of this, is that Petrie is not a captain now this year, which I don't think means anything as far as like his teammates don't think he's a leader or anything like that. Honestly, his play last year is not indicative of somebody who deserves to be a captain. He didn't play well last year. I am optimistic he will play well this year. He had a really, really good preseason, but Petrie not a captain this time around. So, but yeah, Riley, I appreciate the question. Saw it, love it, love the seven, and think it's going to be a good year. Brian emails in, again, houmailbag@gmail.com. I'd like to hear your bold predictions for this year. Apologize if I already missed them somewhere. Some of these are less bold than others, but I am curious of your thoughts on these. And it gives me four predictions. Okay, Brian, I'll evaluate yours in a second. My bold predictions for this year. Well, first of all, my prediction for the season, may as well get on the record with that, is 11-6. I think the Texans are going to go 11-6. I think the first 8 games, they go 6-2. I think the last 6 games, they go 3-3. That's the patch of schedule. It has the 3 games within 10 days of Christmas time there. I think they go 3-3. The 3 swing games for this team are the 3 primetime games in a row. That will dictate how this season goes. Is Jets in week 9, Thursday night in New York, Lions here on Sunday Night Football in week 10, and then week 11, Cowboys Monday Night Football up at Jerry World. Those are the 3 games that are going to dictate the season, because I feel good about 6-2 in the first 8. I feel good that they can split the last 6. So you add that together, and in those 14 games, that's what, 9-5? So they got to go 2-1 in those 3 games right there in the middle. And I think it's totally doable. I think 3-0 is doable. I think they can beat anybody on their schedule. The Texans are a really good football team. But that 3-game patch, to me, is what's going to determine the direction of the season. I feel really comfortable about 6-2 in the first 8 and 3-3 in the last 6. I don't know which ones are going to be the 2 losses early. And I mean, I've got a fairly good idea as to which ones I would pick. And I don't know what the split is going to be of that 3-3 on the back end. But those 3 primetime games in a row, all against teams that are, I would say, I mean, the closest to an elite team out of those 3 is the Lions, and you've got them at home. The other 2, I think, are questionable to be good playoff teams. What's Aaron Rodgers and the Jets? What are the Cowboys right now? You know, they still haven't signed Dak Prescott to an extension. You know, Micah Parsons is still lurking, needing an extension. They did get CeeDee Lamb done, so there is that. But I think those are the 3 games that dictate the season. As far as my other bold predictions, I did predict that Stephon Diggs and Azeez Alshire would be captains. That one has come true. The other one is, I think Tank Dell is going to lead this team in receiving yards. That's my other one. I just think there's going to be so much open space out there, and I look at the guys that they have, and the one who takes advantage of that the most with run after catch and things like that. I mean, they're all amazing, Diggs and Nico and Tank. But I feel like Tank is being kind of pushed to the back a little bit. And the fact of the matter is, one, he's got a great connection with CJ Stroud, which I think the other two guys do as well. But Tank was on his way to having the same, if not better, season than Nico wound up with when Tank broke his leg. He had 700 yards receiving and 7 touchdowns, and there were still 6 games left on the schedule. And he had missed a couple games early in the year when he got knocked out of that Atlanta game and then missed the following week against New Orleans with a concussion. So Tank essentially piled up 700 yards and 7 touchdowns in about half a season. So that's my other bold prediction is I think Tank's going to lead the team in receiving yards. As far as Brian, I'll assess yours right here, right now. Brian says defense will lead the league in takeaways. Bold prediction only because one team can do it, but I think the Texans are a very viable team to do that, and I think they're going to force more turnovers this year than last year when they had – if they didn't have the best turnover margin in the league, it was among the best. The turnover margin thing to me, if their turnover margin shrinks this year, which the regression to the mean theory says it should because there's a lot of randomness built into turnovers – to me, that shrinkage is going to come from the offensive side. I think it's going to be really hard for CJ to only throw 5 interceptions again. They protected the ball at an elite level last year, both in terms of fumbles as well as interceptions. That's really hard to do. But maybe this is just who they are. So I don't think that's a crazy one. It's bold in so much as only one team can lead the league, but I think the Texans are one of those teams that's capable of it. Number two, Brian says we'll have 2 backs with over 1,000 total yards. Okay, total yards. So that would be Joe Mixon. If Joe Mixon doesn't get over 1,000 total yards, something is wrong. Either he's injured or he's not playing well or whatever. So that would mean that either Damian Pierce or Cam Akers gets over 1,000 total yards. I don't think it would be Damian, only because I don't know that he's the receiving threat that Cam Akers is. The bottom line is I don't know what to make of running back behind Joe Mixon now. We haven't seen a depth chart yet. I don't even know if when the depth chart comes out, it matters all that much, because I think they may go with the hot hand or matchups or whatever the case may be. So I think that's really bold because I think it's going to be tough. There's only so many yards to go around, and they've got Tank and they've got Nico and they've got Stephon Diggs and they've got Dalton Schultz. So there's only so many yards, unless you're going to score 50 points a game. There's only so many yards to go around. So I'm going to say no on that one. That one is bold, and I don't think it's going to hit. Third one is we'll lead the league in special teams touchdowns with 5. Last year it was us with 2. I'm going to say no on that one. They may lead the league in special teams touchdowns, but 5 is a big number. That's a big number. And the 2 last year were Damian Pierce and Andrew Beck, Andrew Beck's not on the team anymore, and Damian Pierce is barely on the team. My point, though, is one's a fullback and one's a tackle-breaking running back. Both, even the 2 they got were a little bit fluky, you know? So I'm going to say no, but I like where your head's at. And 5 players will have 8-plus rushing slash. Okay, so 5 players on offense are going to score 8 or more touchdowns. So that would be Diggs, Nico, and Tank. I don't. You have to, all 3 of them have to get 8, or you're not winning this bet. Does Dalton Schultz get into the end zone 8 times? Does Joe Mixon get into? I think Joe Mixon gets into the end zone 8 times. So then it comes down to Dalton Schultz. Like, CJ ain't getting you 8 touchdowns. Like, touchdown passes don't count. I'm going to say no on that one. I'll say this. If they do, then this is the most fun offense to watch easily in the history of this team and maybe in the last decade in the league. If the Texans have 8 or more guys, if the Texans have 5 guys with 8 or more touchdowns, they're not all going to have exactly 8. That means that they're going to have at least a couple that have like 11 or 12. I mean, that is a circus right there. So, Brian, I would say that most of these are extremely bold, but I'm not going to make fun of you and say they're stupid or anything because I hope they all happen. Mike Fink says, love the show. Thank you for the great content. You're welcome, Mike. I would like to ask the obvious. Is Will Anderson going to play on Sunday? D'Amico was coy about it in his press conference this week. We didn't ask Nick about it in the interview today only because he wouldn't have given an answer, a straight answer on it. I don't think. Because I don't think he would want to undermine D'Amico's answer on that. And for those who missed it, D'Amico's answer is that they feel good about everybody heading towards Sunday. So this is what I can tell you, Mike, and podcast listeners. Every practice I was at while Will Anderson was out injured, he was working out on the side field. And working out pretty diligently. My only concern is this ankle injury something that's tied to his ankle injury from last year? Is this a chronic ankle injury? And I think until Will Anderson takes the podium and we get a chance to ask him that, we're not going to know. I don't think the coaches nor Nick are going to say that. To answer your question, Mike, I think he's going to play on Sunday. I believe D'Amico when he says that everybody's trending in the right direction. I don't think this is a Kyle Tucker situation where we're being lied to by management. I just think they're being super coy with it. But I think Will's going to play on Sunday. All the chatter throughout the preseason, even when he was out, was that there wasn't a huge concern that he would not be playing. And I think if he were so injured where he couldn't play, I think there would have been a chance they would have put him on short-term IR instead of Kurt Heinisch. So the fact that Will is not on IR, he's on the active roster, he's trending in that direction, I think he does play. Harvey says, Sean, I know you're a big fan of the NFL Network Top 100 Players. True story. He says, have you seen the ESPN Top 100 NFL rank player rankings? Seems to be way more Texans friendly. What do you think? They were more Texans friendly. There were only four in the NFL top 100. That's the one that's voted on by the players. There were six in the ESPN top 100, which is selected, I think, by a bunch of ESPN NFL writer, expert, muckety mucks. Derek Stingley Jr. was 99th out of 100. Diggs was 85th. They got four in the top 40. Tunsil at 40, Danielle Hunter at 39, Will Anderson Jr. at 31, and then C.J. Stroud was 15th. He was fifth among quarterbacks. I like this ranking better than I like the NFL Network one or the players top 100. Will Anderson Jr. wasn't even in the top 100 for the players, so there's that. Neither was Stingley. Now, Stingley barely made it here. I think of all the players that got named, though, like if we were to just have some fun with this and say, which guy is most likely to most outplay his forecast here or even underplay, like which one was the biggest miss? Because I believe this ranking is based on their potential for the upcoming season. Like what was the biggest miss out of these five or these six? If he's healthy, it's easily Stingley. If Stingley's healthy, he's a top 30 player in the league. If Will Anderson Jr. is 31, then a full season of what Stingley was last year, the second half of the season, is a top 30 player. And I think Will Anderson Jr. was outstanding last year. But I think the biggest miss has the potential to be Stingley. I think Diggs at 85, given the plethora of mouths to feed here, sounds about right. Tunsil at 40, I could see him being 50. I could see him being 30. You know, some of it with him is going to be how well is he? How is his knee? Danielle Hunter at 39 sounds about right. Will Anderson Jr. at 31 actually sounds a little high, just based on his production from last year. But again, it's about potential going into this year. And I think Will Anderson Jr. does have double-digit sack potential. And then C.J. Stroud at 15 feels about right. You know, C.J., top five quarterback heading into his second year, is better than anything we could have imagined when they got the second pick in the draft. So I think the biggest miss potentially there is Derek Stingley Jr. I think a healthy Stingley is a top three or four corner in the league, which would put him among the top 30 or 40 players. They may have missed by about 50 spots on Stingley if he's healthy. All right, Chuck in Denver. What up, Chuck? Says, okay, Sean, we've got a week and a half until football starts. What's your setup with your TVs and sound system in the room behind you? He's talking about this right here. Those are, I bought these when Amy and I moved into this building. Those are up there. Those are two 32-inch flat screen TVs, and then that's a 75-inch flat screen. If you're listening on the podcast, I know this is boring the shit out of you right now. And then those are some big ass speakers right there. I forget what the brand is. I am a yield to the expert guy, and I'm probably makes me an easy mark when it comes to this stuff. Like I can get sold the most expensive shit if the people I feel like are selling it to me are experts. That's a little what happened here. Although the company that did it for me is amazing, and shout out to Jose, the owner of the company. AVS is the name of the company. They did a great job with my stuff. We love it. My wife and I love having this. You know, we've got Apple TV attached to all three of them. So if that's what you're asking, Chuck, we have Apple TV. We stream our TV on the DirecTV app, which fucking sucks right now because there's no ESPN or ABC. But we've got, you know, we've used Apple TV. So we've got we got Peacock, we got Disney, we've got Hulu. We used Fubo for a while till we went to DirecTV. I'm on a 21-day trial with YouTube TV so I can actually watch Channel 13 and ESPN. Fix this shit, DirecTV, all right? Fix it. I don't like cursing because I like my listeners to be able to play this podcast when their kids are around, but God damn it. Stupid shit. All right, Chuck, how'd you get me? How'd you get me so mad, Chuck? How are the two small TVs wired? Chuck said, Chuck, that's about all I'm going to say about my my setup back there. I think it's you and me talking about this right now, Chuck. Needless to say, I like it a lot. Is Amy really a sports fan? Or are you just holding her hostage? My wife isn't as amused by my sports fandom. Amy's a huge sports fan, like a smart sports fan. Like when you're watching an Astros game and there's like strategy going on with the pitching and nibbling around the plate and pitch selection, like she's into it, man. Like she's the best. She's an original Texan season ticket holder. So she's had season tickets for at least 8 or 9 more years than she's had me. So she may love those tickets more than she loves me. I don't know. I've never asked. I don't want to ask because I don't want to know the answer. But she's a huge sports fan. Huge. So I'm not holding her hostage at all. She loves it, man. She was as geared up about these TVs back here as I was. Who did I grow up watching sports-wise besides Notre Dame? I was a Hartford Whaler season ticket holder growing up, living in Simsbury, Connecticut. I grew up a Red Sox fan because I grew up an hour and change from Fenway Park. Hated all the New York teams. And I was a Pittsburgh Steeler fan, actually, when I was a kid because I was born in Pittsburgh. I was a Pittsburgh Steeler fan until, like, college. Once I got to college, a lot of my allegiances kind of got thrown out the window because I knew I didn't really want to live long-term in Connecticut or back in New England, even though I moved back there for a little bit. Once I moved to Houston in 94, I became a Houston fan. I became a huge Rockets fan. That night, I moved here in between the two Rocket championships. That second Rockets championship team is maybe the most fun I've ever had rooting for a team, was the second Clutch City title. That was so fun. Astros fan, obviously a huge Texans fan. So yeah, that's who I grew up watching, though, was teams up in the Northeast. And obviously I'm Notre Dame, and I'm still a Notre Dame fan. That's not a geography thing. That's a they got all my money thing. Coming to visit the fam in October. Would love to grab a beer. Chuck, I will take you up on that. We'll go to Lizards, my local watering hole. We'll grab a couple Yingling flights. How's that sound? Look who it is. France in the North. Now that the roster is set, who do you believe will be the under-the-radar star on offense and defense? Okay, you got a couple other questions here. I'll say under-the-radar star on offense. I'm going to say the interior of the offensive line. I think the interior of the offensive line, by definition, if they play well, they're going to be under the radar because that's one of those things. That's one of those jobs. Like left guard, center, and right guard is one of those jobs that if nobody hears your name, it means you're doing a good job. Kind of like referee or umpire. You know, there's probably several other jobs that are like that, but that's what I think of first. I'm going to say interior of the offensive line. I think they're going to be okay. I trust Shaq Mason. I think Juice Scruggs has real potential. And I think Kenyon Green, now that he's finally not injured and in shape. I mean, we're talking under the radar. There aren't many guys on offense for the Texans who are under the radar. They are star-laden. Everywhere from receiver to tight end to running back to quarterback to tackle. So I'm going to say interior of the offensive line. And then on defense, I would say my under the radar. I'll do the same. I'll say the interior of the defensive line. Foley Fatakasi, Mario Edwards. You know, I think the linebacking core scares me a little bit outside of Alshire. And then I think the secondary is going to be very good. And I think the rush off the edge is going to be elite. So I'm going to say the two interiors, the interior of the O-line, interior of the D-line. And if they're under the radar and they're doing their job, it's going to be a fun season, man. It's going to be a fun season. Which player do you believe will need to be at their best in order to help this team be successful this season? Joe Mixon or Azeez Alshire? Both play in positions where the personnel is thin to start the season. Without question, it's Alshire. Without question, between those two. And that's not a jab at Mixon. I think they can find – Mixon is very good. I think if something were to happen to Mixon or if he were, you know, only 60 or 70% of what they expect him to be, I think they'll still find ways to move the football. If Azeez Alshire is not playing inside linebacker at a high level, especially with Christian Harris out, it's going to be certainly a long beginning to the season. Linebackers are so important in this defense and discipline with those linebackers. So to me, it's a no-brainer. It's Azeez. And I think if I were to put up a poll, I think 80 to 85% of the people would agree with that. Even though Mixon's the bigger name, it's Aziz, and it's not close to me. Let's see, BK, your email is really, really long, really long. It's come to my attention that the football season is upon us. The baseball postseason welcomes our Astros, and the temperatures in town have slightly abated from thermonuclear. So I'd like to take this opportunity to bitch about things I don't like. As a guy who loves lists, I'm going to list off these things I hate, despise, or are slightly annoyed by as I recover from the coolest summer we will have for the rest of our lives. Shout out to CO2 for all you do. I'm not going to read every paragraph here, BK, even though you're the man. Even though you finished this with, these are my complaints faithfully submitted this Tuesday, August 27th, by BK, Sergeant at Arms. Even though you submit this as Sergeant at Arms, which is very funny. The things that you hate. Kyle Tucker's leg. Now, this is over a week ago. Kyle Tucker's leg is supposedly getting better. We just found out yesterday that it was broken at one point. Well, I don't know why the Astros do this. You know what I would say, BK? Direct your hate at the Astros, not Kyle Tucker's leg. It's not Kyle Tucker's fault that the Astros lie about injuries. It's not. The Nolan Ryan Oshan commercial. I've probably seen it, but I don't hate it as much as you, BK, so I can't get with you on that. Said if they had an option to charge me $10 a month to never have to hear a Bluebell commercial, I would tip on top of it. Man, these commercials make you angry. The Bluebell commercials are very soothing. I don't know what you're talking about. It's the first day of the first grade, and they found a new best friend. And then they're eating ice cream afterwards. What the hell's wrong with you, BK? That's beautiful. Beautiful friendship. Do I have Bluebell in my freezer right now? Fuck yeah, I do. I got the blueberry cobbler or blackberry cobbler, whatever the hell it is. And if you haven't tried it yet, God, what was that flavor that Amy had me pick up? I don't know, man. It had like cookie dough and all kinds of stuff in it. Man, they've got some flavors, man. I don't know what you may not like the commercials, but by God, you better like that ice cream. And this isn't even a Texas thing. I don't get into the whole parochial Texas, the Bluebell's a Texas thing or whatever, even though I'm 30 years a Texan now. It's just really good ice cream with great selection. Great selection. It might have been like cookies. It was like cookies and cream, but with like cheesecake in it or something. God, it was good. I don't know how I've kept the weight off that I lost 4 years ago because I eat that ice cream every night. Okay, real quickly with BK's things that he hates. 5, Kyle Tucker's leg. 4, a bunch of commercials. 3, the national hate for Jose Altuve getting out of hand. I can get with you on that. There's no explanation needed there. 2, we literally have people stuck in space, and it has revived the Houston we have a problem trope that immediately casts the person saying it into a Zarlacc pit of despair. Shout out to Star Wars nerds. It's not a Zarlacc pit. It's a Sarlacc pit. S-A-R-L-A-C-C. Sarlacc. It's the thing Boba Fett fell into. We all thought he was dead, and then he came back because there's money in a Boba Fett series on Disney Plus. That's why he came back. He was dead in the Sarlacc, and someone shouted down to him, Boba, hey, Disney wants to pay you to do a sequel. How digested are you down there? He was like, they're going to pay you $4 million an episode. And he just shot up. His jetpack all of a sudden worked. Right out. That's a true story. That's exactly what happened. His real name is Boba Fett, the actor. It's not whatever the name of the guy is. It's really Boba Fett. And he was really in a Sarlacc pit. Don't tell me otherwise. Last one, coaches who think their stuff don't stink. Yeah, Scott Service fits that tab, I would say. RIP. To me, my biggest gripe about coaches is in the college football realm. I think college football head coaches are the dumbest millionaires on the planet. Name a dumber one, aside from like some idiot kid who inherited his fortune. You know what I mean? Like, name me a dumber millionaire than, not all of them, but a lot of them, college football coaches, college football head coaches. They do some of the dumbest and say some of the dumbest shit ever, ever. Damn, BK, I ended up really liking that email, even though it's the freaking Declaration of Independence. You know I love you, BK. Mostly because of this. P.S. I've listened to every episode and want to thank Sean for keeping us updated on the Texans. I'm sure 20 days of training camp aren't fun, but man, do I feel good about our team. Appreciate your hard work. It is fun. So that, I just want to be clear about that. It's super fun or I wouldn't do it. I don't, nobody demanded that I do the episodes I did after each of the training camp practices. I feel very fortunate to have eyes on the Texans every single practice. To me, that's like a privilege. It's really cool. I just know fan Sean, like pre-radio host Sean, would have chopped off his arm to go to football practices and get paid to do it. So I figure the least I can do, and this isn't me like, you know, like patting myself on the back. I'm literally telling you, like, it's super fun for me. I don't know if it'd be fun for everybody. It's really hot out there, but it's like, it's, man, especially with a good team, it's incredible. So I love it, man. That was my favorite thing to do. I love training camp. Anybody who knows me knows I love the process. When the 2 weeks that Seth and I are out doing the show at training camp is my favorite 2 weeks of the year, because I love the process of he and I getting there at about 5:15, go through the show, laugh about some shit. We go on the air at 6. We're done at 8. So it's only a 2-hour show. Then, man, go grab breakfast, get back in time for practice. At 9 o'clock, go to practice, hang out for the press conferences, do some interviews, come home, do the podcast, write my training camp report for the Houston Press. And then you do it all over again, man. And I love that. I love that grind, man. There are a lot of times I don't like having every minute of my day spoken for. More often than not, it's when I'm doing stuff that doesn't benefit me at all. This benefits me greatly to be doing this. But I think it benefits you guys too. And I just love doing it. I think it's fun. I think if I were to complain about it, you guys have every right to just unsubscribe. I've got a great job, man. So no, dude, it's super fun, BK, but I appreciate your kind words and appreciate your appreciation of the hard work, because it is hard work, but it's fun work, you know, like it's the best kind of work. It's fun. All right. Two more. Ryan Lynn, I would like to know your Texans prop bets for the 24 season. Love the show. I've only got one that I'm doing, and it's CJ Stroud over 4,150.5 yards. I think CJ's going to throw healthy. CJ's going to throw for a shit ton of yards this year. That one, he threw for 4,100 last year with no Stephon Diggs, no Joe Mixon, and with him having to really burn, you know, kind of a, at least the early part of the season, some rookie burn-in. Of course, one of the two games, it was a burn-in period. He threw for like 400 yards against the Colts. But I just think that feels low to me with CJ. I would go over on all of CJ's stats that they have out there. Touchdowns, yardage. I don't know what his interception total they have out there is. I hate to say this. I might go over on that just because it's going to be probably a very deflated number based on him only throwing 5 interceptions last year. I think he's going to throw more picks. Not because I think the league figured him out. I just think it's really hard to only throw 5 picks in a season. And I think they're going to be throwing the football a lot. So that's my one Texans prop bet, Ryan. I wish I had more for you. A few others that I really like among quarterbacks in the NFL. I'll give you a little bonus here. Justin Herbert under, I think it's 3,600 yards. He's got a foot issue. He's got new receivers. Jim Harbaugh is not exactly throw it all over the yard guy. So he's got new weapons, you know, no Austin Eckler anymore, no Keenan Allen. And he's banged up. So I would go that. I'd go under there. I'd go under on Deshaun's yardage total. Passing is like 3,600. I don't even think Deshaun likes playing football anymore. So I would never take an over with Deshaun. I feel strongly he doesn't like playing football in Cleveland. And I say that because he barely seems like he's part of that team, at least from where we're sitting out here. And then I would go, what was the other one I took? Over on Jared Goff. I think Jared Goff's passing yardage total is right around 4,000. I'd go over on that. They're gonna throw for a bunch of yards this year, mostly because Jahmyr Gibbs, receiving threat out of the backfield, although I know he was banged up in training camp, Amon-Ra, St. Brown, they've got just really good weapons. Sam Laporta, I think Jameson Williams may finally figure it out this year. So I go over Goff, over Stroud, under Herbert, under Deshaun. Those are my 4 passing yard prop bets. Last one. Couldn't get through a mailbag without my man, Joe Q. Joe Q says, agree or disagree, the cut down to 53 is more like the schedule release than it is the draft or free agency. It's a media cycle that conveys basically nothing of interest, but is good for some Houston press articles. Damn, Joe. Man, I'm trying to finish this upbeat, and you're taking 2 of the things I love the most, and you're basically saying they don't matter. You're just taking a big dump all over the schedule release and the 53-man roster. Damn, Joe. I mean, I want to say screw you, but you're a loyal listener. I don't want to, I don't want to say it, but I might. Joe goes on to say, before the schedule release, we know everything about the season except which game is when. Before the final 53, we know the players who will matter most to winning and losing games. We just don't know how many snaps each will play based on scheme or injury. That's fair. Now, here's what I would say about your schedule release take. The when is a huge part of it. Like, yeah, we know who they're playing almost in perpetuity. Other than the three variable games every year, we know, I mean, next year we know what 14 of the 17 Texan games are. So this is nothing new. The when, especially now that it's not all noon Sunday games for the Texans, the when is incredibly exciting. The when is, I mean, the when isn't just about the season. It's deciding road trips, and it's when's primetime games and watch parties and things like that. I think you are severely understating and underestimating and underselling under everything, underwear. The when, that's huge. Yes, that's what I'm waiting for on schedule release day. The when. Now the roster, I think you actually do make a fair point about the roster. Now, forgive me for being a radio host who is making a big deal out of something for topics. Forgive me for doing my job, Joe Q, taking something that I think a portion of the audience, not named Joe Q, might find interesting, like the 53-man roster, and turning it into a big deal. What is that buzzing noise in my house? Yeah. So, yeah, there's a buzzing noise going on in my house, and I don't know where it is. They're replacing windows in my building. Maybe that's what it is. So, yeah, the 53-man I can get with you on, but we're still gonna treat it like it's American Idol. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what we do in radio. Without looking, what is your guess as to how many players played at least one snap for the Texans last year? Joe knows this. I guessed 70. The answer is 80, and I understand your point. There were 27 guys that ended up playing snaps for the Texans that weren't even on the team at the beginning of the year. Now, they were one of the more injured teams, too. So my guess is that number was lower for a majority of the NFL teams out there. But yeah, like I understand your point, Joe Q. The schedule release, I can't get with you on that, but the 53-man roster, fair point. But why you got to do that, man? Why you got to come in and say this thing that I love is just irrelevant? You know I love you, Joe Q, because I put it in here. It's not like I'm reading this email for the first time. I read them all before I print them because I don't like to waste paper. All right. We are done. Wow, I went longer than I thought I would, but hope you guys enjoyed that. Let's go. Week one, baby. Colts game in Indianapolis. Episode later this week, we'll have the six-pack of things to watch in that game on Sunday. And any other news that comes up with the Texans between now and then, I'm sure there will be some injury news, or at least be one, if not two, injury reports by the time you listen to the next podcast. So we'll get our first injury report tomorrow, and we'll see how Will Anderson is and some of the other guys that were banged up during training camp. So for my producer, Anthony Irwin, I am Sean Pendergast. I will see all of you later this week. Listen to Payne and Pendergast 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Hope to have all you guys there. You can watch on YouTube or Twitch. Appreciate you tuning into the Utopia Football Podcast, everybody. Have a great day.